Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. A pleasure to bring in Noel Hind, and he's an author, and he's written a couple of baseball books that are really terrific. The first one we're going to talk about is The Sputnik Season, 1957. Got to remember that very well. The year New York City baseball in America changed forever. And the second book we'll mention is The Giants of the Polo Grounds, The Glorious Times of Baseball's New York Giants. Let me tell you a little bit about Noel Hind, H-Y-N-D. He's the author of 24 books, including the espionage thrillers Firebird, Flowers from Berlin, and Truman Spy. He's a former contributor to Sports Illustrated. His other book on baseball history is Marquard and Seeley, the true story of New York Giants pitcher Rube Marquard and his wife Blossom Seeley, their scandalous romance and their time together as vaudeville stars before World War I. He also did a book on the final game at Ebbets Field. Noel, a pleasure to have you with us. How are you today?
Thank you. I can't complain, which is, I guess, being ahead of the game right there. So thanks for asking.
Pleasure to be here. Yeah, pleasure to have you on the show. Let's start with the Sputnik season, 1957. And I think what you should do is explain what Sputnik was and is to the audience, and then we'll talk about the world in 1957 and why this book came about. So go ahead.
Thank you. The Sputnik was the first man-made object, unless you're a conspiracy freak, to go into the skies and into orbit above the Earth. And Americans sitting smugly in the United States during what was a good era for most people, the Eisenhower era of the 1950s, were convinced that Americans had all of the technology. And when the Soviet Union launched Sputnik 1 in the middle of our World Series, it was an absolute shock to most people. We didn't know that they had the technology to get up into space. We didn't even know there was a space race. And to make matters worse for most Americans, Sputnik was in an orbit that you could see from the northeastern United States. I can remember, since I'm an old goat these days, I can remember 1957 very well, and going out with my family and my father pointing up, and here's this ominous little dot going across the sky. It looked just like a star, but you could see it from the naked eye. And there it was, made in the USSR, and it was going over the United States. So hence the Sputnik season, 1957. It was the year Sputnik went up, and it was the year that Sputnik means fellow traveler in Russian, and fellow travelers, Dodgers and Giants, headed out from New York to the West Coast, as we all know.
Boy, interesting. The Sputnik season, 1957, it's really an enjoyable book. Not only do we talk about world events, but Noel gives us a recap of the 57 season, which we'll talk about, and he gives it his twist to each moment of that 57 season that he talks about. Noel, why 57, though? Why the Sputnik season for you? You could have chosen others.
Well, there were a number of reasons. First of all, as Lawrence Ritter once said, when was the golden age of baseball? And it was when you were 10 or 11 years old. I was born in 1947, which I don't admit publicly very often, but I'll do it for you here today. So it was the first season that I can remember. My dad was a Willie Mays fan. I loved Stan Musial. He took me to the Polo Grounds to see the Giants play the Cardinals. And then as an extra treat, we went to see the World Series. So we got to see the sixth game of the 57 World Series. And again, flash forward, I later was writing for Sports Illustrated, started researching a lot of baseball, and I realized that 57 season was an absolutely extraordinary season. And that was my initiation to the first season that I could really remember.
Boy, the Sputnik season, 1957, is the book. It was the final year in New York City for the Giants, of course, with Willie Mays and the Dodgers. And the fan base, boy, they couldn't believe that these two teams were going to leave, and that sort of cloud hovered over the season the entire year.
It did indeed. There was an aura of disbelief about the whole thing. But, of course, the template was right in front of everybody, and that was the Milwaukee Braves. The Boston Braves had been a failing franchise for the last several years in a bad ballpark in Boston. Nobody was going to games. suddenly they go out to Milwaukee. Milwaukee goes absolutely crazy over the team, and they turn into a powerhouse. And what O'Malley really had his eye on was the Milwaukee Braves had a parking lot for 10,000 cars, and the ownership got cash parking receipts for every game, and that for 10,000 spots. And it was O'Malley looked at this and thought, where can we go? And of course, where else was there better car culture than Southern California? So an awful lot had already been put in motion. The Giants had turned into a really poor team on the field. They were just stuck in sixth place for much of my memory. So it was inevitable. The Giants announced first that they were leaving, and O'Malley held up his decision till after the season ended.
Well, the Giants were in the midst of it, and I remember Horace Stoneham, of course, wanting the parking for the fans, too. This was the year and the years that the migration of people from the inner city were moving out to the suburbs, and cars were a big deal. And when you had a stadium, you needed the parking, as you just described for the Dodgers. But Stoneham wanted the same thing. And Mayor George Christopher, Supervisor Francis McCarty, they convinced Stoneham, if you come to San Francisco, we'll build you a stadium with 10,000 parking spots. And, of course, that turned out to be Candlestick Park. So that's how Horace went along with Walter O'Malley. But 57 was Hank Aaron's first real big year. He was the MVP of the National League. Of course, 54, he breaks in when Bobby Thompson breaks his ankle in spring training. But for Hank Aaron, that was the year that people said, boy, this guy's a big-time player.
Absolutely. Aaron hit 322 that year, 44 homers, 132 RBIs. He hit the home run that won the pennant in a late pennant race against
Billy
the
Muffet.
Cardinals.
Billy Muffet.
Yeah. I think it was the only home run Muffet gave up all year, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
It was just meant to be. Coincidentally, if you look at the season in a historical perspective, which I have the bad habit of doing frequently, it was also the time when the second generation of great black players were coming into their own. You had Ernie Banks. You had Frank Robinson, you had Minnie Minoso, and people like Newcomb. Robinson had already retired by the end of the 56 season. Newcomb, Joe Black, those guys were the first generation. Larry Doby was still around, but the tide turned in that season. The Yankees were no longer assured of winning the pennant and the world championship. It was just a turning point also in the 50s.
Well, 57 also, as you said earlier to us, was the first year of Eisenhower's second term. A lot was going on in the country, and that ties into the pennant race as well. Tell us about that.
Well, you had, I think what you're where you're going toward this is, it was, again, it was Ike's second term. You had a lot of tension in the country with a Suez crisis. The Soviets were, you know, edging toward their space program. But you also had civil rights situation of frustration by a number of our citizens over not getting our rights. Schools had been technically and legally desegregated by Brown versus the Board of Education. Certain states were not complying. And Eisenhower, toward the end of the summer, and I guess it was in September, had to send troops into Little Rock, Arkansas, to make sure that integration was being affected and completed. So what was going on the field, you also had a situation where Hank Aaron was the toast of Milwaukee, but frequently could be invited to speak at baseball occasions. But in certain states, the you know, he would never have been allowed to enter the same room as a guest. There was a lot of quiet frustration among black players on that. And many spring training sites in Florida had not been desegregated yet either.
Boy, 1957, and two great pennant races were going on. Of course, Milwaukee breaks the string of Dodger-Giant, you know, pennant contenders and pennant champions. And, of course, the Yankees now are being threatened a little bit. They always were by Cleveland, the White Sox, Tigers, Boston. But the Yankees are in a little trouble, too, in 57.
the Yankees were, shall we say, complacent to start the year. I was just looking at the actual standings last night. What happened was the Yankees kind of shook up the boat after the Billy Martin Copacabana incident. They unloaded Martin to Kansas City since he got the blame for the brawl at the Copa. And then the Yankees kind of turned it on. They went into first place at the end of June and never looked back, or never got past. But the White Sox had an excellent team and then chased them the rest of the way, sometimes getting as close as 3, 4, or 5 games, but never able to get in front of them again. In the National League, it was even tighter. They were at the All-Star break. Even the Giants were mathematically within sight of first place. But it was really a 4, 5, and then 3-team race in the National League, not settled until late September.
Mm. Boy, the Giants did not have a great year in 57, and Horace Stoneham, of course, as you said, was part of O'Malley leaving New York to head to California. And they said to Horace, gee, Horace, the kids who come to the game will be so upset. And Horace said, well, I wish their fathers came with them. And they didn't have the attendance. But Ted Williams, boy, that year, come on, he's 39 years old, and he wins the batting title in the American League. 39 years old for Ted Williams. It's part of this great year. Hits 388. How about that?
He hit 388, and he came to the plate, I think, about 420 times. And if he had had 5 more singles in those 420 plate appearances, he would have hit 400 again. That really kind of puts it on the map. Nobody else ever came close. The footnote, of course, is that Mickey Mantle was coming off his Triple Crown year in 1956, led the American League not in home runs, not in RBIs, not in batting average, but what the heck, the writers gave him the MVP award anyway instead of Williams.
You know, 57 also had Noel Hind is with us, by the way. We're talking about the 57 season, the Sputnik season, the Russian satellite that was launched during the World Series of 57 and really put the country on edge. But as part of a baseball season, we love for new players to come on the scene. Will the next player be the next Williams, or will he be the next Walter Johnson or Juan Marichal? And we had that situation in St. Louis with Lindy McDaniel, who eventually became a San Francisco Giant, who was a great Cardinal, and his brother, Von McDaniel, 2 Oklahoma guys, and Von McDaniel was fabulous for a short time.
Von McDaniel was unhittable until everybody could hit him. That was kind of the legacy. This guy, and he was my hero because he was one of the closest people on the field to my age at the time, you know, 10, 18. No, he came out of high school. He was the high school valedictorian, and came to the Cardinals. He was a bonus baby, so they couldn't send him to the minor leagues. Freddie Hutchinson, who was the manager, worked him into a mop-up appearance, I think against the Phillies. Nobody could hit him. And a week later, right out of high school, he comes into a game against the Brooklyn Dodgers, and one of the first guys he's facing is Duke Snider. Well, as the season progressed, he flirted with perfect games 2 times. He won the game against the Dodgers the first time he pitched against them. That was in St. Louis. And then about a week later, he pitched a 2-hit shutout in Ebbets Field against the champion Dodgers. Later on, beats the Pirates on 2 hits. He beats the Braves. He ended up winning 7 games, losing 5. And after that, the magic was absolutely gone. Something happened over the winter with his mechanics. He could never capture it again. It was like a shooting star, if you want to continue the space metaphor for the season. I'll never forget it. He never came back to the major leagues. He won 7 games as a Flash in 1957, and that was it. And of course, Lindy, parenthetically, pitched for, 20 years? Because he went on to the Yankees after the Giants. Had a long, long, and distinguished career.
Yeah, Lindy McDaniel, Cubs, Cardinals, great relief pitcher, starter at one point. But Von McDaniel, it's a great name. And like we like to enjoy baseball and see people break out to the scene, he did, and then was never heard from again. Noel Hind is the author of The Sputnik Season, 1957. We support our local bookstore, The Book Tree, up in Montclair. I'm sure David can get it for you. Noel, the other book that I want to touch on with you is The Giants of the Polo Grounds, The Glorious Times of Baseball's New York Giants. And you did this book, and you've been out to San Francisco. You've talked about it. It is just an amazing, amazing book of the Polo Grounds and the Giants. Tell us about that one.
Well, it's the reason I wrote that book was, aside from being a closet Giants fan for most of my life, I used to live in New York City, where I'm from, and I was out running one day. I used to run Madison Avenue over to Central Park, and this guy who owned an art gallery had a picture of the 55 Dodgers in the window of the art gallery, figuring that that was a work of art. Well, I guess it was. And I'm thinking about that picture, and I think, why doesn't somebody write a book about the Giants? There's all this stuff about the Dodgers and the Yankees. So one thing led to another, and it took me about 2 years. At the time, I was really known just as a spy novelist, so nobody would give me a contract. Then I started getting some assignments with Sports Illustrated. So then my agent repackaged me as a Sports Illustrated writer, and we got a contract from Doubleday. And then a couple of years ago, I redid the book, added about 50% to it. So it became the so-called new and expanded edition, because, as usual, I can't shut up. So I added 100 pages of stuff really about the background of New York, about Jimmy Walker, about Broadway, about the Tammany machine, about corruption, about what was going on behind the scenes. And it just plain made it a better book. It runs about 600 pages. That was that, but it's still doing very, very nicely on internet sales. On, I probably shouldn't mention Amazon, so I didn't. It's doing nicely. So thanks for asking about it.
No, I'm glad. The Book Tree can get it as well. The Giants of the Polo Grounds.
Yes,
Noel Hind, H-Y-N-D, is the author. Going back to the Sputnik Season for a minute here. The All-Star Game, and I remember this in 57, the Cincinnati fans stuffed the ballot box, and I think they voted in their whole team as a starting team, and the National League president, Ford Frick, had to, I guess he was commissioner at that point, he had to get involved, and Warren Giles and everybody else, and they put Musial, Mays, different people on the team, but how about that midseason?
Yeah, that was one of the ongoing stories, and it was pretty amusing. The All-Star Game was going to be in St. Louis, but the Red fans, in a surge of civic pride, decided that it should really be only Cincinnati players. One of the newspapers, to backtrack for a second, Cincinnati team was called the Red Legs in the mid-50s. So that they didn't have to use the word Reds, which obviously had political connotations. The Cincinnati Star-Times printed a ballot with the name of the players right on it. And then a brewery in Cincinnati, Burger Brewery, had distributed extra ballots to bars all across Cincinnati. So all you had to do really is order a beer and you got a couple of ballots. I think in some bars they wouldn't give you a beer until you filled out a ballot. So then all of these things were packaged up and sent off to the National League or the Major League offices to count. And it took a while for the commissioner to figure out what was going on because George Crow was leading Stan Musial at first base. Well, no disrespect to Crow, who later played for the Cardinals anyway, but that was just a little bit out of whack. And Aaron wasn't getting enough votes. Mays was running behind Gus Bell. It just didn't make that much sense. So the commission had to step in, and as a result, the fans lost their vote for a couple of decades.
Boy, amazing. And now it's such a big deal for the fans to vote, and they don't care. You can vote five times in one day. They encourage it. Boy.
As I used to say in Chicago, vote early and often.
Yeah, very good. Well, Noel, it's great to have you on the show. As you can tell, I enjoy the books. And the Sputnik Season, 1957, so much going on in the world. And it really was a unique year for Major League Baseball, of course, with the Giants and Dodgers heading out to California after the 57th season. So I appreciate you being on. Good luck with it, and we'll have you on again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. Take care.
All right. That is Noel Hind, H-Y-N-D. And check out the Book Tree up in Montclair and get the Sputnik Season 1957. All right, more coming up. KNBR 680-1045, the sports leader.